sometimes I have to admit, it makes my head spin to consider how far we've come with our technology in the last 20 to 30 years. I recall being in junior high science class, Mr. Zimmer's class, and on days when he wanted to take it easy or if he wasn't going to be there, he would have videos. And some videos that he showed quite often were tapes of Walter Cronkite's The 21st Century. I believe it used to be shown on Sunday in the early evening. And I remember thinking, wow, it's amazing to think that these things could even possibly happen. And yet, many of them have. Some of them haven't. I remember one where they made a home in just a matter of a day that was formed out of a simple frame, and then they sprayed some kind of foam over it that hardened, created a hard shell. And they said that was going to be the homes of the future. Kind of like a domed home. I remember the show about telephones and how someday where they were going to have TV cameras on them and you would be able to see the person you were talking to while you were talking to them. Of course, I always thought, I'm not sure that's a good idea considering how I answer the phone sometimes, especially if I'm running from the shower. But of course, it wouldn't matter this day and age because we all look at caller ID and see if we even want to answer it in the first place. Most of the time we don't. We just let the message machine take it. But by far to me, the most miraculous thing in technology that wasn't predicted in the 21st century TV show is the technology of the GPS. To be able to put in a starting point and a finishing point, and like that we have several possible routes given to us to take. And we choose our route, and then we can push a button, and a voice tells us when to make the turns. It warns us that we have it coming up, and then right before we get to it, turn right, turn left, go straight, whatever. And if that's not enough, if you're still unsure, then we have Street View. And you can click on that, and you can go, and you can see what the buildings look like where you're going. So the idea is when you get there, say, oh yeah, I remember that. Okay, this... And it helps us to find where we're going. You know, it's interesting to me to know, too, that GPS has become so popular that paper maps are very difficult to find anymore. And I remember all the times when I was growing up, and as an adult, in looking at those paper maps and looking to see how cities related to other cities and what was around them and things like that, places where I'd been, even. With GPS and Street View, we have a pretty good idea of what to expect that things will look like when we get there. But then again, I often find that when I get there, it doesn't meet my expectations. The light's different, something's different about it, and I don't recognize it. And that's kind of what I want to talk about today. But how things are not always what they seem or what we expect. And how we might miss God because of our expectations of how we might find God. You know, we have a neat and orderly holiday season and traditions. But it's very likely, highly probable, that they're different, very different than the first Christmas, the real Christmas. Giving birth is painful and difficult. Anybody who has witnessed or gone through a childbirth certainly knows that. And Mary experienced that. And yet we experience Mary always kneeling and prayerful at the manger. And it's just so serene and wonderful. And I doubt if it was like that. We experience that we have this Christmas of the Magi entering the house. And yes, it's a house. If you read the account of the Magi, they entered a house. So whether the Holy Family had moved to a house out of a stable, I don't know, but that's the way the account goes. And there's probably a baby crying somewhere. The Christmas Carol, Away in a Manger, talks of cattle lowing and the baby waking and he makes no sound. And I sing that. It's so wonderful sounding, and it's very, again, serene and all, but I just want to laugh. I doubt that's the way it was. It's easy to let our domesticated expectations of Christmas get in the way of reality. You know, in the book of Acts, the priests and the Pharisees want to lock up Peter and the other disciples. But Rabbi Gamaliel makes a very good observation. He said, "Do not arrest these men, for if their work is of God, you will be going against God. But if it's not of God, it will fade away." And the idea, what he's saying behind those words is, don't let your expectations of what the Messiah will be like get in the way of maybe the Messiah being different and seeing that Messiah. Those were wise words from a wise man. And John the Baptist is in prison. And he's beginning to think that maybe he's pointed to the wrong man in all the Renaissance artwork, especially the one that I saw 2 summers ago that involved altarpiece. It shows Jesus on the cross and Mary there, and John on the other side, and John is pointing to Jesus. And the idea, it shows the belief that John's mission was to point to Jesus. But now in prison, he's hearing these things about Jesus, and he's beginning to have second thoughts. So he sends some of his followers to ask Jesus if he is the one. And Jesus tells them, "Tell John what you see. The blind are receiving their sight. The lame are walking. The sick are being healed." And so on. Jesus says, don't have doubts. But don't believe all of your expectations. Where do we expect to find the Messiah? Anyone looking at our holiday celebrations would say, well, it looks like we expect to find Jesus in our family get-togethers and parties. And we expect to find Jesus in peaceful Christmas Day and Christmas Eve activities. And we expect to find Jesus in those people who give us wonderful gifts. That's not to say we can't expect Jesus in those times. But I don't think those are the only places, or even the best places, to see Jesus. We can find the Messiah in some pretty strange places today, and in some pretty strange people. I shared with you several times over the years a piece by Johnny Youngblood, a minister who at one time was pastor of the St. Paul Community Baptist Church in Brooklyn, New York. And in a sermon at that church, he said, and that's a very crime-ridden section, at that time it was. And he said, every time I see a man put down his bottle, there's a resurrection going on. And every time I see a man going back to school, there's a resurrection going on. And every time I see a man hug his son, there's a resurrection going on. Well, if we change resurrection to incarnation, then I think we can find the incarnation in life today. God becoming human in Jesus in some pretty interesting places. If we go back to what Johnny said, every time someone challenges somebody else to put down the bottle, Jesus is present in that person doing the challenging. Every time a person encourages a man or a woman to go back to school, Jesus is in that person. Every time we see somebody supporting and loving and hugging another person, that person doing the hugging is Jesus. I think we can find Jesus in groups that work at the Hillside Food Bank, where food is made available to those who need it, as well as to other food pantries to serve their communities. I think Jesus is found in people like Omar, who works at the Hillside Food Bank, who helps groups that come in to know what to do and how to do their job, but at the same time, he does it with this wonderful smile and lets us know that we're making a difference in people's lives. I think we can find Jesus when we are hugging and holding on to someone who has just lost someone important to them. I think we can find Jesus in that cook who gives up time with family or friends to go and cook in the food pantry. And in those people who also give up their time to come and serve it with a smile and be a friend to the hungry who come to the soup kitchen. I think we find Jesus in places like prisons. When people come from the outside to visit prisoners, to remind them that they're loved, to remind them that they're remembered, that they're cared about, and given hope that maybe they will, when they get out, they can make a difference in their lives. I know this because I served on the board of the Visitor Center for Attica Correctional Facility in upstate New York when I was in my first church. We find Jesus when people gather, give up their time off to build a house and to share in the life of the person or the family who's going to receive that house. And we understand how much it means for them. We understand that they are people who need help. We find Jesus in the smiles and the words of people who encourage us. The day before Thanksgiving this year, Barbara, my wife, had to pick up a couple of things to finish making a pie that we were going to take to the Thanksgiving dinner with our future daughter-in-law's family. And she was standing there in the aisle at the supermarket, and she must have had this kind of puzzled look on her face because she was contemplating and thinking about something. And this woman who was looking at something next to her kind of looked over at her and said, "Don't worry, honey, it'll be all over tomorrow." That woman was Jesus. And Barbara smiled and was grateful. We have to enlarge our perspective, our expectations of Jesus and when Jesus comes and where Jesus comes. Jesus doesn't come just in our designer Christmases. We need to look for Jesus all around us. The laughter of children playing, in the smile of an older person, in the gentle touch of someone helping us. And sometimes God needs us to be Jesus for others, for someone else. Recently, I was invited to join a wonderful Facebook site called Pantsuit Nation. And it's a site where women of all ages, women of all color, women of all religions, can share their struggles in today's world. This is a fairly new site on Facebook, and you have to be asked to join. And you read stories about these women who are hurt by comments that people make to them, angry, hurtful comments, or by actions that have been done to them. And you read about how they stood up to these people because they've read on the Pantsuit Nation other women who have stood up and has given them the courage to stand up. They've remarked about someone else who has stood with them in that very difficult time and helped them through it. And all of them are so grateful for the many, many, many supporting comments that come from other members of this Facebook page. Isaiah talks about strengthening weak hands, making firm feeble knees, saying to the fearful-hearted people to be strong, do not fear the people who do the things to them that they do. Isaiah says that's an incarnation of God. We need to look around and see God in the world around us. Ann Weems, for many years, was considered the poet of the Presbyterian Church. And in a book that she shares a bunch of her poems, Kneeling in Bethlehem, which I've shared out of extensively a number of times, she wrote a poem entitled, Had We Been There. In this stable, they struggled, poor and dirty, hardly suitably dressed for polite society. Had we been Joseph, we would have feared robbery. Had we been Mary, we would have feared germs around our newborn. Had we been God, these are not the ones we would have chosen to first come and see the child. After all, they showed a certain carelessness about the rules of the church. And yet, God chosen, they came to kneel and worship Him whom we would later call the Good Shepherd. Perhaps we could brush up on our holiness. We must check our expectations of Jesus' incarnation at the door of Advent and look about with the wonder of a child, seeing all of the little incarnations going around us. We can't use GPS to find Jesus. We have to use faithful eyes. Faithful eyes that see Christ in every loving, compassionate act and word that happens or is spoken around us. And therefore, my hope for us is in the next 2 weeks and for the rest of our lives that you and I can have those eyes. Amen.